Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, think you know tea? Well, then you haven't tried Tiesta tea. Tiesta tea is my favorite tea. Whether hot or cold, you're going to find a flavor profile that fits your needs. Tiesta tea is on a mission to create loose leaf tea beverages with premium ingredients. Tiesta tea segments their teas down to 5 functional categories based on each tea's natural health benefits. This way, you can choose your tea based on what you need it to do for you. Then pick a flavor profile that fits your taste. Whether hot or cold, this gives you a natural way to energize, slenderize, boost antioxidants, boost immunity, and relax. Get 15% off your next online order with the code JBTV15. That's JBTV15 for 15% off your next online order. Once you go loose, you never go bagged. Tiesta tea, a bold tea for a bold you. Hi, I'm Jerry Bryant, inviting you to join me this week for a very special podcast. I'm talking with the CEO of Pantheon Podcasts, the one and only Chris Swain.
This is Christian Swain, the CEO of Pantheon Podcasts and the host of Rock and Roll Archaeology, the cornerstone of our Pantheon Podcast Network. We have 90 plus shows, all music related, and we're moving into television. How are you, Jerry Bryant?
Awesome.
That's good. That's good. I like the little Pantheon logo there behind you.
Yeah. Isn't that great? Yeah.
That is great. That is great. So this TV thing, that's a whole brand new thing for us. We, we kind of always knew that we would get there. We just didn't prepare for it. when it was like, hey, okay, TV's here. We got to get our people to understand, hey, look, you know, you can videotape all of this stuff and then make it happen. So,
and as to video, you know, it's a whole new world for all of us. And with Zoom, it sort of opened it up for everybody. I got to say, you know, your podcast is awesome, you know, and it's so scripted and so well written. And I don't know, you know, that's the kind of video podcast that would be all like video B-roll over it, you know. So, yeah, tell us about how you started Pantheon Podcast, because it didn't just come out of the air and everything, because you started with your own podcast, correct?
Yeah, Rock and Roll Archaeology is the cornerstone of what became Pantheon, or is now, you know, the Pantheon Media Company. And, this podcasting empire of 900. I love that we chose the name Pantheon. Hats off to Peter. He's the one that came up with that. And we were going back and forth. We needed to step away from Rock and Roll Archaeology as like the moniker that people knew us. And we went through a whole bunch of names. And Peter, I think, knows that I have a love of mythology and how that all works together, and how that helps create culture. Because more than anything else, I'm probably a cultural observer, and hence you see that a lot in rock and roll archaeology. But with Pantheon, House of the Gods. I mean, you know, when we're talking about rock stars, rock gods and goddesses, you know, in the end, if you've ever walked into the Pantheon in Rome, you know, there's these little shelves throughout the ceiling. They're little cubby holes when you get right down to it. That's part of the architecture, but the intention is that each one was for the gods. And so there were, you know, in ancient Rome, it was a pagan society, pre Christianity, And, you know, they had many gods, and they were more than willing to take on gods from everywhere, let me tell you. So the pantheon was really important to house everything. So, but back to rock and roll archaeology, I've always been an entrepreneur, you know, ever since I was a kid. And in fact, you know, I was probably 12 years old going door to door selling greeting cards, that I got out of, you know, Boy's Life, the Boy Scout magazine, back in the day. I learned very quickly that if I just knock on the door and say, "Hey, would you like to buy some greeting cards from me?" You know, I get the door slammed on my face more often than not. But if I knocked on the door and said, "Hey, these are for kids in need of some sort," they'd be willing to give me their money. So that worked for about a week until some parent discovered what I was doing. And, you know, I got in trouble for not being completely truthful, I think is what we might say with that. But I don't know, it seemed to work. And I learned a little bit about the sales game. And I've been doing that ever since. So I started several tech companies in the 90s and early 2000s, and I sold one in 2007. That one worked out pretty good, and I lived out a contract and with a much larger company. And when I sold my company, which you know, was small, you know, maybe 20 employees there, I sold it to a 1,300 employee company. And when I left in 2014, it was 30,000. And as an entrepreneur, that's just not fun. You know, you're just a number. You know, I'm not the kind of person that, you know, can just keep my mouth shut and cash a check. You know, I'm constantly saying, "Why can't we do it better? Why can't we fix this? How about that? How about this?" And, you know, so I it just wasn't the place for me anymore. And so I kind of said, "Do I really want to do this again? Or do I want to do something different?" And I kind of felt that tech was at least what I was doing in the physical layer side of things had kind of commoditized. You know, I rode this wave from the 80s on of, you know, this all being invented. And there was always something new and something to evangelize. And that was great. And by the time I got to 2014, you know, certainly after 2010, it just started to change and really wasn't fun anymore. But I've always been a musician, and or at least practicing to be a musician, put it that way. And I've done that since I was 16 years old. And that's really my true passion, but I can never figure out a way to make a living at it. I probably should have gone into the executive side of things instead of the talent side of things. I probably would have done pretty well over there, but you know, that's just not the path that I took. And so when I had a chance to do it over, you know, here 7 years ago, I decided that I wanted to, you know, take a chance and do something really radically different. Podcasting was new, or at least the beginnings of a podcasting business, I should say, was really new. Serial, famous podcast, you know, had kind of gathered the attention of the masses, or at least people that pay attention to that sort of thing. But it became a big deal. And I listened to that going, "Well, geez, I could do that." Low barrier to entry, entertainment. Well, what is it that I want to talk about? Well, I want to talk about, you know, music. Silly me, not realizing that targeted might be better. I went wide. Super wide. The let's just tell the whole story from beginning to end chronologically on what this music of the late 20th century, it's all called rock and roll to me. You know, how this affected the world that we live in today, how it created the culture first known as a counterculture, but now it is the culture. And rock and roll had a lot to do with that. It commented on it in real time. It created a feedback loop with that culture, certainly the youth side of it. It really helped create the world that we live in today and still do. You know, it's so obvious when you get things like the new Beatles Get Back documentary, you know, it's still 50 years on, and these guys are still just as important as they were back then. It's pretty incredible. So rock and roll started it. Rock and roll archaeology started it. Interestingly enough, it takes us 6 to 8 months to research, write, and produce each of these episodes. And I have a writing partner that I do this with, Richard Evans, who we've known each other for 40 plus years. We've been arguing about this for 40 plus years. So it was time to, you know, put pen to paper. It's engineered by another friend of mine who I've known for 40 years, Jerry Danielson. And so the three of us are basically the ones that kind of put it together with the help of Peter. Peter helps produce a lot of this as well, you know, but it takes us 3 to 6 months to research, write, and produce each episode.
Wow.
And so it's 7 years on. We're working on episode 21 right now, and we're just getting into deep into the 70s now. So this is a long form, long term project. We're talking 10 plus years by the time we get done with it, which will take us up to about the millennium, the beginning of the millennium.
Yeah, it's so well done, though. I could see now that you've got all this audio recorded. You could put video to all those older episodes, and it would be like a documentary series, because you are so in-depth and so cool with everything, you know. It's extremely interesting to listen to.
It was originally conceived as a proof of concept, POC, for a television series. Mm-hmm. So it's intentionally done that way. And given some time and some funding, it is being shopped as a, you know, big time, you know, multi-series documentary. I mean, it's multi-season, excuse mm-hmm. me. We see it as 5 seasons. Out there, and we've crafted it as such. But that's a big lift. The way these things work is, success breeds more success. The show is successful. It's not top of the charts. If it was, we would probably get a lot more knocks on the door from Hollywood. There is a pathway these days, prove the concept with a podcast, take the audio and then put B-roll on it, a lot of archival footage. And, you can then get the second stage, put that on YouTube, and then somebody come and say, wow, let's turn this into a big time documentary. That would be the, the ideal end to this whole thing when you get right down to it.
And what's so cool is Pantheon Podcast is all music-related topics. It's very focused. And I think a lot of people don't realize that there's so many podcasts out there. You know, where do you find a place?
2.5 million now. Two and a half million, yeah.
Wow. And they're all doing interesting things, you know.
Yeah.
And the fact that you've sort of consolidated all these different types of music. And, mm-hmm. It's funny because I was talking to one of your youngest podcasters, Daniel, with the Ready to Record podcast.
D3, yes.
Yeah. And it's so interesting to hear his perspectives on the industry and where it's going and everything. And as a musician at that young age, is he one of your youngest podcasters?
Yeah, I believe he is. At present, he's our youngest. I think we have a couple of young ladies that are even younger than Daniel that are coming on board here pretty soon.
Well, that's so good, because I think this whole industry needs as much new and classic podcast, everybody, the whole spectrum, and we all live together in one place. That's awesome.
Well, certainly with Pantheon, as you said, Jerry, it's about music. Mm-hmm. That was the one sort of dictum that I made very early on, was that we would stick to music and specialize in this vertical market, because we felt that we could, be a large player in a small pond, because music podcasting was not really thought of as a big subject matter. I mean, obviously crime drama is like giant on podcasting. I can't wait for the day to that end. But, music was always down at the bottom. Well, now it's not. Now it's at the top. And, we were one of the first out there to put a really quality, in-depth music podcast together, Rock and Roll Archaeology. And because it takes us so long to put those together, we had fans, say, well, can't you do something else in between? And we looked at each other and were, oh yeah, I guess we could. So we created these what we call the original six, couple of recap shows for some now defunct TV shows on music, vinyl, and roadies. A show about rock and roll movies called Real Rock. A San Francisco librarian called the Rock and Roll Librarian. Vinyl snob, just people that we knew around us, you know, that we could put some stuff together. And then I created another interview show called Deeper Digs. We then kind of ended up having a network without actually realizing it, because then the next step was people started calling us going, hey, can we be a part of your network? And that's when the light bulb went off and we were like, oh shit, we have a network. And we started building from there. And then we knew that we wanted to not be pigeonholed in a particular type of music. We very much want, again, rock and roll archaeology is very broad. My musical tastes are extremely broad. Same thing with Peter, yours, you know, pretty much everybody in the network. You know, we have exceptions. We have like the Shout Out Loud cast guys. They love Kiss, and they just talk about Kiss every week for 3+ hours. I'm not sure how that is possible, but apparently it is. And God love them, they do great. And there's apparently a giant Kiss army out there, as we've been told about for all these years. And you know, so we got a couple of shows like that. And but we try to be broad. We try to fill holes now. We're looking for things in other languages. We just have our first Spanish language podcast starting up here called Los Juanchos Hablan Metal. So the Juans talk metal. There are a couple of Colombians that you know love metal, and metal's huge in South America, and so we're excited about that. We've got a lot of, so I guess the point is we have a lot of diverse voices talking about a lot of diverse type of music, and I love it.
Well, that's what makes everything great, because radio is the one that screwed up with this niche format. You know, you can only be on top 40.
Don't get me started on that.
Yeah, well, I've been in radio for many years. You know, I worked for 300 stations with Joe Kelly. We had a company called Superspots.
Energy, powerful, polished. Screen projection, the Electric Light Orchestra, the classic rock and roll concert experience, ELO, Constant Motion. The Dynamic Innovator. If it can be done with sound, then chances are nobody can do it any better than he can. The amazing Todd Rundgren.
For Bob Seger, rock and roll is his life. He grew up with it. It's sort of the idiom of expression. He's been in rock and roll for 12 years, and he's completely comfortable as a rock and roller. I mean, when he writes rock music, you know, he's writing about his life. He's paid his dues. He understands that rock and roll is a performing art.
For Randy McIlrath, every event must be a stardate.
It's something that people started off coming to see. It's an event.
Working on a nightmare down on Main Street till it shines. Cause you're still the same.
An ingenious composer, a penetrating lyricist, a masterful musician, a sensitive, captivating performer, a haunting, electrifying encounter with an entertainer who personifies the essence of originality. This is Al Stewart.
You know, sometimes you're bound to leave her, but for now you're gonna stay.
Stewart. He weaves a magic spell that will mesmerize every member of his audience. Al Stewart at the PAC.
You're on my mind like a song on the radio.
This is the new group you have to see. This is the new sound you have to hear. This is Dire Straits.
She can still hear him whisper. Let's go down to the waterline.
A breath of fresh air.
We are the Sultans.
Dire Straits.
We are the Sultans of Swing.
Ever since he burned up 52nd Street in Bebop's birth, he's reigned without challenge as America's number one trumpet player. The man behind the horn is the king of bop, one of the few remaining giants, Mr. Dizzy Gillespie. Now, Father Earl Hines, he's a legend too.
The man's got a chaw of tobacco on both sides of his mouth. The man puts out a mean brand of rough and ready rock and roll. The man is Charlie Daniels.
But the Wichita jail is a long, long way from a Tupelo County line.
From 3 tons of solid steel scaffolding, a crew will erect the stage. A corps of sound engineers will integrate 21 miles of wiring into a total sound system. In all, it will take 50 men 3 days to prepare Milwaukee County Stadium for one Sunday in September. A day 61,247 people will remember as the main event. Kotke, Roy Hayes. Make way for Gary Wright, Manfred Mann, and Robert Palmer. The Spring Spectacular of Rock. Firefall.
Firefall.
Firefall. This is Ted Nugent, the wild man of rock and roll.
And we did all the major tours, ELO, Pink Floyd, Judas Priest, Kiss, Prince and the Revolution. So we've done all those things. And, these radio stations, well, you can't play this here. This is only in this format. And that's not what it's about. Music is universal. You can like all kinds of music. And it's blending together. The artists are sort of doing it on their own now, you know?
Yeah, well, I think when we were growing up, Jerry, men of a certain age, if you will, radio kind of, that was where you went to find your music to start with. And then the next step was, the record store clerk there who would give you the good stuff. And then, the music magazines. And by the way, that is what we try to do in a 21st century package, is combine those three jobs, for the artists out there to get that word out and keep the word out and keep these back catalogs up, break new artists and things like that. Those three things don't really exist much anymore, or they're not consumed in that manner anymore. And so we've taken that job on. But with radio specific, it was an artificial creation of these genres and, starting in the 70s, before that with AM radio, you could hear Jimi Hendrix and Motown and a blues song and a pop song and the Osmond Brothers, I literally from one after another. FM started to specialize a little bit. That's what created these genres out there, Lee Abrams and what did he call it? Psycho analytics, I believe. That kind of worked until consolidation began. And now pretty much the flavor of and the uniqueness of the geography is, we talked a lot about California in the 60s. And we highlighted it with two shows, one on L.A. and one on San Francisco. And they inhabited the same state, but their musical differences were, as black and white could be out there. And that just doesn't really exist anymore. And to your point, what is nice is by having all this music available, mostly through streaming, on demand, your influences are, a mile wide and a mile deep, as opposed to maybe an inch wide, a mile wide and inch deep, or vice versa. So I think we're seeing artists that are grabbing from just about everywhere. And I think that's a great thing.
All those radio stations, they had disc jockeys that could put in records that they liked. And it was amazing how you could travel around the country at one point, and every city had a different sound, you know, like the just these individual mom and pop stations where there weren't the corporate rules, you know. But now it's, you know, like you were saying, it's one guy in one city programming 300 stations, you know.
And and pretty soon, not even that, I just read that iHeart is about to introduce virtual DJs.
Oh, yeah, I heard AI. About that too.
AI DJs. So you won't even have a person involved. And I think that's also, you know, a big mission for us is that we don't want machines telling us what our music is. I think music is just so personal. It speaks as an art form the closest to the heart of any art form out there. And so having a machine send you this, what you might like, just doesn't feel authentic. Whereas, again, having another person with like-minded ideals make suggestions, you're more apt to pay attention to that, if that makes sense.
It does. And it's, you know, that's the one thing I hate about what they've done to the media. And that's why I'm excited about podcasting. And it's one thing that podcasting's all been an audio form. And to me, people always like to see who is on the podcast. You know, you may have a picture on the site or something, but to see them in the studio or whatever. And that's why I thought with the thing I'm putting together at VPod TV, it's like it's video podcasting. And, you know, what's cool is like with Roku, which is, you know, the TV or whatever, you can have the remote with the headphones. So one thing about television, when you watch a movie, you sort of have to pay attention to it, you know. But with podcasting, podcasters have one thing that television sometimes forgets. And podcasters know how to tell a story. They're telling you things because they're not thinking about pictures. They're thinking about a radio type audience, you know. So,
Jerry, you know, humans, if we in the future destroy ourselves and are gone, we'll be known for three things: the invention of the wheel, the capture of fire, and storytelling.
Yeah,
you can take just about everything we do and go back to one of those three inventions or discoveries.
Yeah, and in the primitive days with storytelling, they had music too, so can't leave that out.
Drumming, at least, right?
Something, yeah, there was something going on that kept things going, so, you know.
Right. No, you know, and what is beautiful about podcasting and storytelling specifically is there's just so many different perspectives now that you can get on a singular subject, you know, and especially one as broad and deep as music is. You know, there's, you know, it's not just an elite now of critics that are determining, you know, or DJs or playlist. Now, what do they call that? The station managers. What do they do? They did the before they called them playlists. What are the guys they determined?
The program directors
or program directors? Program directors. I forgot the title.
Well, most stations had music directors. The program directors sort of made sure that the on-air talent was on time, who they were putting on the air, and if they're coordinating things with the sales department. No, we can only have 12 minutes of commercials this hour or whatever.
Right.
And the program directors then worked with the music director. Like for my show, JBTV, Greg Corner, who's in the band Kill Hannah out of Chicago, he's the bassist, but he's the one that selects a lot of the bands I've had on the show, because he's really good at that, you know.
His ear is towards the street and paying attention to what is the up-and-coming thing, right?
Exactly, and he's DJing in clubs, so he knows what's going on in that way, you know.
Right.
And the other hand, I just love musicians. I love the fact that they can make music and do things. And so I'm always wanting to help people. I want to put people on television just to expose them, because there's so many artists right now that may have a great set of music and it's sitting in their closet, you know, and they're doing another job because no one ever got a chance to hear their music. So I always want to help the underdog, I put it that way, you know. So, but I think between the two of us, we figured out a pretty good formula because we've had a lot of great bands on our JBTV stage here in Chicago. And it's just been a labor of love, you know.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You know, you mentioned, you know, you said there was 2.5 million podcasts out there. You think that's bad? There are 60,000 songs that are uploaded to a streaming service every single day.
Wow.
So imagine trying to break through that noise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think, you know, I think where you're going is that's where they need people like us to help find, you know, the nuggets, that are out there in the sea of mediocrity, and then give them a lift up. I have played with a ton of amazing musicians and bands, especially back in the day when I was trying to make it as a professional musician, who I just thought were the greatest songwriters, and they had all the things that you would think to make it, and they didn't. And this was back in like the 80s when it was, you know, a small group of people that were doing it and there wasn't this giant sea of noise. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine trying to, you know, do it today, you know, unless, you know, I would get my buddies, I'd get a van and I'd just go to town and never stop to build that audience organically from a live perspective. That's where the money is these days. And then, you know, make songs. I'd get rid of albums. I wouldn't do any albums. I'd just do songs and songs and songs and songs because, you know, unfortunately, the album today is kind of a dead art form. The single, which is where we were before, you know, the album is the current way to expose your music out there.
Well, albums were usually put together by musicians that told a story.
You know, the better ones are definitely, unfortunately, then it ended up being like, you know, one good song, you know, on a record of 13 and you're paying $16.99 for it. So,
yeah.
You know, there are reasons why we live in this world that weren't all, you know, rainbows and roses.
Well, that's why I thought I'd put a podcasting video show together to expose different podcasts. And as a trusted source, and I'm thinking, well, Pantheon Podcast is VPod TV, any way you look at video podcasting.
I think so. Yeah.
You know,
Let's face it, you're on the network yourself there, Jerry. So it does make a lot of sense to come to us first. But you know, what I like is that we're not the only ones, by the way. There are other podcast networks out there. I think that's important. You know, who knows? We may be the future Warner Brothers and Epics and Asylum Records and RCAs and Columbias of the future.
Yeah, well, I certainly think you are. So you're doing it great, you know. And I even discovered a few different, like, you got a cancer podcast. What's the name of that one? The young...
Teen Cancer America. It's called The Real Me. We're working with Teen Cancer America, which is the WHO's charity, Roger and Pete's charity that they started in the UK about 30 years ago. It was called Teen Cancer Trust over there. And they brought it over here in 2010. And the mission of Teen Cancer America is that, you know, most cancers are either pediatric or geriatric. But there is a group of young adults, adolescents, young adults, we call them AYAs, that don't really fit in that. And they don't have anywhere to go. So really, the reality was, you know, TCA realized that, A, these patients are going through things differently than than what you normally find in cancer wards, and there may be some unique attributes that are important for the treatments of some of these more adolescent type of cancers. What Teen Cancer America does is to go out to hospitals and try to fund these wards. And then from that, this program called Play It Back came out of this, where instead of just having it, it did start off with, you know, musicians going in and playing some songs for some kids. But instead of just that, it became more of like, let's make this interactive. Let's draw the kids in to create music. And it's run by this gentleman named Kenley Mattis. who does a great job of finding musicians, mentors from everywhere to develop a song from scratch out of the head of these adolescent, young adult cancer patients, and then surround them with professional musicians to create a fully realized produced song. It's pretty incredible. And so what we do is we follow that journey of them getting an opportunity to work on a song with these professional musicians and get it recorded. And we go through three iterations of the song from inception to fully realized. And hear their story along the way. Their friends and family usually chime in to give their perspective as well. I think it's one of the best things we've ever done. To be honest with you, and it's, I think it's one of the best things that I personally have ever been involved in. That feels like I'm giving something back, if that makes sense. Because these shows themselves are just incredible to listen to. Bring tissue, but at the same time, it's not all a downer. It's really inspirational. So it's a great show, and thanks for asking about that one.
Yeah, because I'm a cancer survivor. You know, they gave me little time to live, and here I am years later, surviving stage 4 colon and lung cancer.
Oh, man.
It's amazing how today's doctors and today's even my doctor, Dr. Michael McGee, who saved my life, he said, you know, I'm not a normal surgeon. I'm like a rock and roller. I take my kids to Lollapalooza. And literally, I set him up. We had the wombats come in, and I had his family. He said, between surgeries, he came down with his two kids and his wife and his mother-in-law or somebody. And he had such a great time. And the wombats, what a great band. They embraced him. I even put him on TV during the interview. And he says,
in medical school, you decide what kind of doctor you want to be. And there's all these cool things that you can do to help people, like work in the emergency department or do organ transplants or surgery. But the coolest thing for me and why I love music so much and why I love surgery so much is for 8 to 10 hours each day in the operating room, I can just listen to whatever I want.
Oh, yeah,
and so
right.
I got to pick, and I was like, boy, you know, this is a long operation. But, you know, at the time we used to listen to radio and listen to all the breaks, and we used to listen to cool Chicago radio stations. And now with iPads and Spotify and everything else, you can listen to exactly what you want. So we listen to the Wombats all the time. And actually, we listen to the Wombats during your surgery, Jerry.
Oh,
so
really?
Yeah. So it all comes together.
No wonder I'm recovering so well. See? Yeah. It's the music.
You know, when we have young doctors and young medical students in our OR to see a surgery for the first time, they come back and be like, you know, the surgery's kind of long, but I really like listening to music. So for us, that's what we love. So this is awesome. So great to see all this together.
Wow. You know, Jerry, the one thing I really like about surgery is, because there's all this time, I get to listen to music, and I was listening to the Wombats.
While he was cutting on you?
Yep. Yeah, he was listening because he says it's good to have music on during surgery. And surgeons will have classical music. Others will have rock and roll. Some even have Kiss playing in the background. But it's amazing how it's a whole new world of medical. It's not like the old days. And there is hope out there. And there is hope out there for these cancer patients that get cancer. And the biggest thing I found when I was going through my stage 4 chemotherapy and all that, everybody there is like, oh, I'm so depressed, you know? And I was like, hey, and to me, you got to have a positive
Laughter's
attitude.
Laughter's the best medicine, they say. You know, engagement.
Music what got me through it. Literally, I'd go through chemotherapy for 6 hours, and then I'd have a band in it at our studio, and I'd go back to the studio right after chemo and shoot a show, like, you know, 10 songs with a band, and do an interview, and then I'd start editing, because you have to have something to keep you busy, because if you lay around and start, you know, feeling sorry for yourself, and I'm so sick, and you just get worse, you know, so... Yeah. It's so good that you got that podcast, and it's so great that you got music on one great platform. And I'm so happy that JBTV is part of it, because most of my interviews, you know, I'm not as good as you are and a lot of the other podcasters. And I'll tell you why.
Interviewer.
Because my podcasts are the TV shows. So I'm always thinking, oh, I got to get this song in. Tell me about this. Tell me about that.
Now that
I look back, I go, I wish I could have talked more like we were doing a podcast, you know. So it's sort of reverse engineering. But I think I try to do high quality stuff too, because it's
you do.
You know, it's all about the music with JBTV.
It certainly is. And the exposure of bringing in things that people may not be paying attention to and seeing something that, you know, they didn't think about. In a weird way, you know, you're kind of like us on TV doing the record store clerk, FM DJ, music journalist. Mm-hmm. You're doing the same thing in a manner that is easy for people to digest today. And I think that's the same with podcasting. You know, we live in this mobile world. I can't put Rolling Stone magazine up on my dashboard as I'm driving down the freeway, but I can put a podcast in my ear and listen to, you know, the same information told in that manner. You can't exactly watch TV while you're driving either, but you can listen to a podcast. It's neat to be in a weird sort of way. It's not a new art form. It's a revived art form. I mean, you know, if you go back to the golden age of radio, this kind of stuff was, you know, the rigor, you know, it was every day sort of thing. So just to see that come back and have, you know, an environment where it fits well today in this mobile world is really great to see.
Well, what we're going to do on this edition of our show is expose some of the podcasts that are beginning to get into video. And we're sort of liking that because we want to expose people that may not tune around or know what's going on and experience it. It's like when I go on your site, I don't have time to listen to every one of your podcasts that are on there. There's quite a few. How many do you have now?
Well, we have 90 shows total at present, mm-hmm. And continually to grow. We very much are strategic about what we're adding these days. We're not just adding any show. We do get a lot of submissions out there, but you know, we're looking for things that build a bigger tent when you get right down to it. Television with some of these shows is the next step for us. I don't know if all 90 of them will follow suit, but I think some of them will have at least some form of a visual component along with the
Diddy TV is one that has a lot of visual component to it.
Yeah, well, like yourselves, they both kind of started on the visual side and then move to the podcasting side as well. I think they can work hand in hand.
And obviously, I'm Amy Wright, and I'm with Diddy TV. I'm the host here for Insights.
You're in Nashville, are you?
We're in Memphis.
Oh, Memphis. There you go. Just up the road.
What is the future, you think, of all this?
Wow, that's a big question. Like I said, I think that the future when it comes to Pantheon and music podcasting is, we've been able to take this this old technology of the FM DJ, the record store clerk, and which neither one really exists at all anymore, unless you're a vinyl snob, and then the music journalist, of which there's still a fair amount of music journalists out there, but hard to get recognition. It certainly doesn't hold the cachet that it once did, and we've combined that all into a singular package in a format that works for our modern digital mobile world. So I think that's the future, and I think we're already there. I think we're seeing that, and we're double-digit growth on a monthly basis nowadays. It's really incredible to see the growth out there. We'll take some of our shows and move them to other mediums, television being obvious. We've got a podcast. In fact, we've got a couple of podcasts that have been turned into books. Bob Dylan on Man, Law, and God by Stephen Arnoff. That is, I think, publishing this month digitally, and then in a Dead Trees format later on next year. We're seeing some of our shows being picked up for terrestrial radio for syndication. So we see that. We're building original shows to spec for both corporate customers and for larger platforms like Apple, Pandora, SiriusXM, Tidal, and others.
Yeah, I could see it, just a podcasting audio channel, like a radio station, terrestrial radio, or on a SiriusXM,
too.
So
terrestrial radio is dead. put a bullet in its head. It's just You know, look, once it consolidated, it lost its special sauce, which was this geographic uniqueness. It literally is only good for a distance, right? And it kept the flavor of that distance in its DNA. But now you don't have that. And at the same time, we live in an on-demand world. And so, people don't like just being fed what, you know, somebody else is deciding for them. They want to decide it for themselves. And, we don't live in that old paradigm that, allowed that sort of thing. It's just a technology that's run its course. And, you know, some people call podcasting the infinite dial. And there you have it right there.
That's so true. But I don't know that any of these mediums are dead. Well, AM radio, I don't think, remember the daytime radio stations, they're sort of, but I don't know, FM.
Oh,
I
you
still...
mean the talk radio stuff? No, yeah. Even that will all go online. I mean, just the infrastructure of, of broadcast radio and the costs associated with it. When the public itself can find the exact same thing on their mobile phone, it's going to end up like UHF, mm-hmm. Where UHF went away as far as a consumer facing technology, and it's maybe being used for other things, and it's supposed to be used for other platforms like police and fire. I think they were going to take UHF off. And so the same thing will happen to the radio frequencies, FM and AM.
We got a lot to look forward to.
I know you're an old radio guy, I've talked to plenty of them, Lee Abrams, and they all agree with that assessment that, it's a question of how long it'll take. Mm-hmm. Is it going to take 50 years or is it going to take 10 years? I personally think it's going to be more like 10 years.
Well, if they let stations be personalities again, I always thought it was funny because we'd talk to a lot of corporate people and they'd always call their disc jockeys talking pieces of meat. They didn't understand that the morning or the afternoon guy is the one that's bringing in all the business for your radio station,
Right.
And they're a personality. And that's what podcasting is. It's personality based. It's people giving their expression, their feelings about stuff. So it's a total natural progression. But television, on the other hand, has gone digital. And every TV station has multiple channels now. And they got this new FCC, the ASCA or whatever it's called. It's going to be interactive. You can start doing with television in the future. Mm-hmm. So that may save terrestrial TV. We'll see. To be determined. But still,
we'll see. We live in quite the streaming world as it stands right now.
Well, in theory, that's what it'll be. It'll be able to put it on your phone, and there it is,
And if you can, if you can move to that technology, into this mobile device-driven entertainment space, then you could probably have a future.
I mean, look what Howard Stern did with Sirius XM radio. Nobody cared about Sirius XM.
Brilliant move.
And I remember we got some video of Howard going, get me out of this job. I need a job, before he went to New York and stuff. But, and now he's the king of, but he really built Sirius XM. And look at them. People would say, who would want Sirius XM in their car? Now it's standard. People are used to it. And you got your niche channels. You got this. You got that. It's all there. And you can put it on your phone and listen to it anywhere. So it's a whole, it just shows how technology is really coming of age now in so many ways. And they were doing video too way back when Howard was, so.
Oh, that's right. Well, he had a TV show, if I remember.
Yeah,
right.
Back when I was on TV here in Chicago on WGBO, he was my lead-in show. So he'd he'd get these great ratings and everything. And then I'd come on and play all this weird music that nobody's heard,
right.
And not get as good ratings. But
so apparently the audience didn't follow after Howard much.
Howard had his audience,
Yes.
But then, like the station manager would come to me, why don't you play Madonna? And I go, well, why play Madonna when I can play, Peter Murphy or some of these other artists,
Yeah, let's give somebody else a shot.
Even when Peter Murphy came to the studio, he says, you know, the Scarlet Thing and You, he did that video his wife put together for $60,000. And he was saying, MTV won't play it. Nobody cares about my music. I should just get out of music. And I go, never get out of music. And he never did. But, you know, someone of that caliber still could. Even Joey Ramone, when we had him on the show, he would complain about, nobody, you know, MTV embraced us one day, and the next day it's like a breakup. We're not talking to you anymore, you know?
I'd like to see TV change for the better. If I see the Ramones one more time on MTV, I'll go crazy.
Have they been playing it a lot?
No.
Well, yeah, and unfortunately at that particular time, you know, if MTV was, you know, the arbiter of musical tastes and whether you liked it or not, and yeah, if you weren't a part of that ecosystem, then you were in a really bad position.
Yeah.
But that's not the case today. You know, there's just so much music and so much a variety of music that it's great. It's fantastic. And the fact that, you know, it is at your fingertips, and, you know, there's a bit of a downside to that. And we talked a little bit about that is, you know, there's just, you know, this sea of mediocrity. But I think that's why people need, you know, what JBTV does and what Pantheon does. And that is to find those nuggets, expose it, bring it back out. You know, you just had Gary Newman on your show not too long ago, and I had forgotten about Gary. And I watched that thing, was like, wow, I'd go see him when he comes to town. I'll go see that. That looked like an awesome show. It was fun. It was interesting. It was still very Gary Newman. Don't get me wrong, but it was there was something there that that I didn't want to forget. And I think that was important that that we keep, you know, and you know, look, I'm an old school guy. I look back towards the past because I consider myself a bit of an amateur historian. And, I've never been one that jumped on the bandwagon of something new. I needed somebody to have a catalog first before I kind of felt like, oh, OK, this is worth my money, whether it being to spend on an album or a ticket. I didn't really like to jump in unless it was really small, you know, the clubs and things like that. That's a little different. But anything with any kind of weight behind it, I really needed to make sure that they had something that others had determined was successful. And then I'd go, OK, I'll jump in. So I kind of look back at things in that and then look at how those building blocks come together to get to that point. You know, I wanted to learn it for myself, figuring that there must be some secret formula to how to, you know, become a rock star. I just wish the Get Back 8 Hour program had been released 50 years ago, because that would have helped a lot of us, let me tell you. Oh, it's just a bunch of hard work. A little inspiration, lots of fun, and then just constant hard work. Oh, geez, I wish somebody would have told me that 50 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're really seeing just this explosion of good music out there, and almost to the point of too much good music out there. It's almost impossible to keep up with.
Well, I think we're doing a good job. What was your first concert? You grew up in San Francisco, right?
I grew up in L.A.
Oh, Los Angeles, KLOS country, yeah.
KMET, yeah. KLOS, K-Rock, mm-hmm. KNAC, those were our big rock stations out there. My first concert was at some little band, a horrible singer, Queen, they were called, what was that guy, Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, I think that's the one.
I mean, it's really hard to go when that's your first concert, to get much better than that. I was just recently asked that on an interview, and I've seen the Stones 4 or 5 times, all of them with some of the greatest openers in the world. I mean, literally Prince, Guns N' Roses, Pearl Jam. That's crazy. I saw The Wall 1980, saw the later iterations as well. But seeing that in 1980 was pretty special. Bruce Springsteen, Halloween Night, 1980. But seeing Freddie Mercury for the first time, you know, the full rock experience was incredible, and probably, you know, set the rest of my life in motion.
Yeah, music. I got to tell you, that's been my passion all these years, and I'm not an expert at music. I never said I was. I'm just a music lover. So
I just wanted to be an expert. So I've tried to learn as much as you humanly possibly can to be that. So. I don't know if anybody could ever really be an expert. I mean, it's a lifelong pursuit. It's they call it a practice for a reason. You know, there's always something to learn. I don't care how good you ever get. It's the voice of the universe. You know, they say math is the language of the universe. Music is based on math, so therefore it's its voice.
Yeah, I consider Matt Pinfield, when he was at MTV, to be an expert. Because he sort of knows everything about music, you know. So, you know, he's one of the few people I respect in the business that has actually been there and knows it and lives it and has a passion for it, you know. I always hate hosts that, like, want to know more about the band, than they, you know what I'm trying to say? They seem to be above the band, that they know more about the band than the band knows about themselves, you know.
That kind of makes a good interviewer, too, when you know the answers to all the questions that you're going to ask.
That's a court case. That's what attorneys do.
so Matt probably would have made a very good attorney.
I guess he would have, yeah, looking back, yeah. This is fun. So are you having fun here?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. It's the most fun I've had in my life. Every day I wake up with something fun to do. It's work, you know, but it is. And then every day, it just about almost every day grows. Mm-hmm. When I started this thing, this was a real crapshoot, Jerry. I'm telling you, it was. I had some money and I was going to go, well, I'm going to throw all this money into it. And I didn't know if it was going to turn into anything. I'd cross my fingers and hoped. But boy, I've never had a project that just constantly, like the universe was speaking back, going, this is working. This, mm-hmm. this new thing, this person showed up. Just as you were like going, I need this. Oh my God, there's this person that I need. Things like that. I think that's the biggest takeaway for me is just, you know, we have almost 140 people that are involved in Pantheon. And it's just amazing that, you know, all these people came together just because it's music, mm-hmm. you know, to rally around this thing and turn, you know, this simple little concept into this, you know, big behemoth of a network now with 90 plus music related shows. So I don't know what I did to be so lucky, put it that way.
Well, you're doing the right thing and you're helping artists get exposure too, and you're helping new podcasters out there. So it's an exciting time we live in, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. It's a new world. You know, I mean, I think we're seeing the birthing pangs of this new world in some ways good, in some ways bad. You know, the industrial world that we lived in, that we grew up in, you know, has been pretty much decimated over the last 20 or so years. And we haven't quite gotten to what that new world is yet. We're still in that process. And in many ways, it is absolutely exciting. I mean, this is as big a deal as, you know, the invention of the printing press was 500 years ago, you know, men landing on the moon 50 years ago. This is as big, if not bigger, to be honest with you. We are, as a species, all interconnected now. You know, we always were in an environmental way, an ecosystem way, but we are in a human mental way now. We are all connected. Everybody on this planet that has access to the internet is interconnected with everybody else. And it's pretty extraordinary to see all that occur in the last 15 to 20 years, where it's really, really started to become a big thing. And certainly in the last 10 years, you know, the advent of social media and everything that goes about with that. And a lot of people want to complain about some of those things. And there's plenty to complain about. But by and large, it's pretty extraordinary, and where it will take us as a species is really extraordinary if you really think about it.
And you got some good sponsors too that you've got. Like you got AKG microphones that are doing things, which sound is so important. And I think you're also showing podcasters how to be quality conscious now too.
Well, when we started that way, this all comes from the very beginning, and that is, I've been an NPR listener since I was in my teens. I'm giving away my nerd credibility here, but the fact is that that's the gold standard. And so when we started Rock and Roll Archaeology, we wanted it to sound like that. And every podcast that comes on to the network, we work with them. If they don't already have that level of quality audio, we work with them to get there.
Cool. So what else you want to talk about?
Well, you mentioned the sponsors. Yeah. AKG, and that's Harman Audio, part of Samsung, that we have an ongoing relationship with. BetterHelp, we're working with now, Tiesta T. We got programmatic advertising. I think the going away message might be, hey, if you got a great podcast or you have an original idea when it comes to music podcasting, come and talk to Pantheon Podcasts, and we will work with you to develop that into a reality.
And they can get in contact with you just on the homepage and stuff. Is that the best way?
Yeah, just go to pantheonpodcasts.com. That's pantheonpodcasts.com. And you can get a hold of Peter and I, and we'll have a chat and see if you got something there.
Well, I'm sure some new talent will be discovered through the show too. So,
yes, definitely.
Wow. So, well, I hope
now we're moving into TV, Jerry, and we'll see what that brings us.
I think television is just right now. It's just going to help build a newer audience that isn't familiar with Pantheon, and they're also not familiar with a lot of the different podcasts out there. So they'll have a chance to discover some of the talent, some of the new bands, some of the classic bands, and of course your podcast, which is so beautiful, so extremely well written. I didn't think it took you 6 months to write an episode, but it shows,
Well, yeah, it's a big job. I mean, we have to think about what we want to say. And we actually now, it's funny, when we started, we start post-World War II, because that's really where this world begins. And youth culture is developed in the 1950s. And what that means is that the teenager had disposable income that they could do something with. And that's where rock and roll comes out of. We talk about the desire to not be conformist, and what freedom really is. And we see that in rock and roll. That's really what that music is about. It's a democratic type of endeavor as well. Very American when you get right down to it. It's from the bottom up. It's the common man's concerns and issues, which, again, very American. If you think about how history has worked in the past, again, post-war. But the funny thing is that the further you get deeper into that story, the bigger that funnel gets. And so now in the 1970s, where there's this giant explosion of music, we now have to pick and choose what stories we can tell, because we can't tell them all that we may have been able to do in the early episodes. So it gets a little bit more hard. It gets a little harder out there. But I think we have it plotted out pretty nicely to give the full story of music and culture and technology and politics and entertainment and the world at large, and how all those things came together. Well, Jerry, thanks so much for the time to explain all of this.
I think it's important that you do explain it and let people know that you're out there, and it's a place to discover music and talent talking about music. Of all different generations, and music is timeless. It's ageless, Like you were saying with the Beatles documentary and stuff, that music is just as current and relevant today as it was when it first came out.
I cannot believe, I'll be honest with you. I had a dog in the fight here. We did our explanation of why the Beatles broke up in our 1969 two-part series. And, you know, we were a little afraid that this was going to be some revisionist history and change the narrative, you know, the accepted narrative. And, you know, we told our stories almost 50 years on as it was. So, you know, that's pretty solid ground from a historical standpoint. And we were afraid that it was going to come out and, you know, change that narrative. And it didn't. It reinforced it and it gave nuance and color to it that I thought was brilliant. And I just was just so shocked on how good it was with just four guys sitting around just being the four guys. Yeah, there are some moments where you know, get back being the most famous. Now, in the first episode, to me, and I'm trying to put this in my head, because we're going to do a rock and roll archaeology shorts where we talk about some topical things, because most everything we do is very evergreen, and this would be very topical. And in that first episode, it's really about Paul creating Get Back. When he does that out of fucking thin air, you're like, oh my God, it's like watching Shakespeare write to be or what to be, or you're like, oh my fucking God.
Yeah.
The second episode is about Billy Preston showing up, because the second he shows up, man, everything just changes and in a great way. And you're like,
with the popcorn song.
Yeah. And then the third one obviously is the full concert out there in and to get to see that wow, in a little over 3 weeks, these guys who hadn't played together live in 3 years came together and were just as badass as I'm sure they were in the Cavern Club.
I don't know. I saw him backstage in Chicago as a little kid, and I couldn't hear.
Did you?
I couldn't hear a thing. All I heard was the screaming girls.
Yeah. Well, that's why they quit. That's why they quit touring in 66. They couldn't hear those. And let's face it, the technology, the PA technology just didn't exist to be able to handle the size of venues they needed to play.
Yeah, it was like, and I don't know, they were screaming so loud. All I remember, my ears hurt.
Well, wait a minute. How old were you? And two, how did you end up backstage at the Beatles concert?
Well, that was here. I was at working with a radio station in Milwaukee, WOKY. And
what, four?
I had to have been. I was underage, let me put it that way. And Bob
Berry. Wait a minute, Jerry, how old are you?
I'm 70.
Oh, okay. Number one, I'm surprised you're 70. You look great. okay, so if you're 70, let's see. So then you would have been. So maybe you're, what year, 60, 65?
63, was it? 64? I don't know. I don't remember. I just remember.
Every night, 64 is Ed Sullivan. They only played East Coast.
It was here in Chicago at the Coliseum, I believe. We drove down from Milwaukee.
65. Had to have been 65.
Okay.
It had to have been 65.
Yeah. You know, that shows you my memory. But all I remember is we drove down. I had a Nagra tape machine. And we were going to do an interview. We never got an interview. But I did do it later on, years in the 70s. We got an interview with Paul McCartney that we did. And I knelt at his feet. Somebody else did the interview, but I was running the camera. I'm more of a technical guy, you know, with my shotgun mic. Actually, it's the same mic I'm using right here, right now, my Sennheiser, which I love.
Did they play the International Amphitheater?
I'm not sure. It was an old place.
So it wasn't Comiskey Park.
No, it was an indoor place with indoor venue, from what I remember.
It could have been 64. They did play the International Amphitheater in 64 and 66, and they played.
So
Comiskey
that could
Park.
Have been the one. And all I know is we were backstage, and they had like little curtains, and then we just saw them run back and forth, and that's all I pretty much remember about it. We couldn't hear a thing. It was just screaming girls. It was, you know.
Yeah, that was always a problem, and a problem for them. I mean, they couldn't even hear Ringo. It was so cacophonous out there.
Yeah, and
if you listen to our episode 7 and 8 about them, especially episode 8 and why they got off the road, not only was it that, but it just got dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
It literally got dangerous for them. They had a real problem in the Philippines when they inadvertently made fun of Imelda Marcos and the Marcos administration made life very difficult for them to the point of where it scared the shit out of them. They weren't sure they were getting out of the country alive. And then when they came up and did the final show here at Candlestick Park, they were put into a armored truck, and it was just cold, and you know, they were trying to drive crazy to get out of there to beat the crowd, and they got knocked all over the place. And when they got on the plane, I think George was like, yeah, I never want to do that again. It's getting dangerous. It just literally was getting dangerous. And so they kind of said, well, you know, this recording thing is all really neat and it's growing and the technology is changing on a daily basis at that point. That was a great time to be in the studio. It totally makes sense to me to go and focus on that. And it wasn't until, you know, the late 60s and even really the early 70s that you really get the sound quality to be able to handle the size venues that they had to would have had to have played.
Yeah, that was a crazy, crazy time. Then I had freckles then and everything. And as he came off stage, they gave me some drumsticks. Like, here.
Oh, really? Ringo, you got Ringo's drumsticks.
I only have one left.
But cool, my friend.
That's about all I remember of it. And
a real artifact that one day could be worth millions of dollars.
Well, you got to doc. I don't know how you would document it. But it just was funny that I remember Bob Berry. He was like,
the provenance has to be dedicated to it.
Yeah, he was upset. I needed to get an interview or an ID, and we got nothing. We drove down here, and my parents didn't even know that I went out. I went down with this older guy to a show, but everything was cool. You know, I did a thing called Junior Achievement. I wanted to help kids get into broadcasting back then. And I talked WOKY and WISN in Milwaukee, and WTMJ, the journal company, gave us a television show live on Saturday afternoons for a few months to do our Junior Achievement show. So,
wow, that's very cool. That's how you got into it, huh?
I loved, you know, and back then television used to have hosts, you know, like radio did, where they would sit in between the shows and talk about, oh, here's what's coming up next. And a lot of it was just to fill time because, you know, the film would be wrong or there'd be a problem technically. And it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, on that. And it was local television that meant something. And, you know, it's amazing how then radio became that way. And now the internet and podcasting's that way.
Yeah. The host is that. You know, the quote unquote expert that is going to give it, guide you. You know what I mean? More than anything else. And, you know, I think, you know, the promise of the internet early on was to destroy all the gatekeepers.
Yep.
Get rid of all the gatekeepers. And we did all that. And you know what? Some of those gatekeepers really needed to be destroyed. There's no two ways about that. But look, human society is human society, and you know we like boxes, we like categorization, we like to be able to put things in some form of an order, if you will. You know, freeform jazz is cool every once in a while, but you know, after a little bit, most people get tired of that. You know, they want to be directed on where to go, you know, so that makes sense where a host is the best way to do that.
Right. And there are so many technological companies out there that make small, inexpensive cameras that are high quality 4K. And so there's so much that we can be talking about. And it's so easy to do it. It's not like it used to be in the old days, you know.
No. I think, you know, in a weird sort of way, podcasting is audio made really easy. TV is going to go that way too.
Mm-hmm. So, it's already there. You know, so
yeah. And you know, to your point, to take Rock and Roll Archaeology and stick archival footage on it, you know, boy, I could put that out on YouTube tomorrow. My problem with that though is that I'll get taken down immediately, and because there's a bitch battle going on YouTube with creators right now about the use of copyrighted material, and you know, this, you know, we've always had this thing called fair use out there, which is really a defense, and It's so complicated in that only big players could play in that world anyway, so it really didn't become an issue. There's licensing. But we now live in a world of small creators, and small creators can't afford those big licensing costs. So there needs to be a mechanism to be able to achieve that. And I think that may be a future for us as well, especially with music licensing. The reality of what we do is all in context. We're just like a review show, just like Siskel and Ebert used to do, Chicago guys, right? Mm-hmm. They play clips of the movie and then they talk about it and they get people to go and watch the fucking movie.
Yeah.
That's the point of doing it. Okay. Yep. We're doing the same thing. By us talking about it, is not stealing your music. It's causing people to go and buy your music. So, and they do recognize that. We've had discussions with some fairly significant players. They know it. We are definitely on the radar. We know that for a fact. But there's just no mechanism that's agreed to at this point. And what they have told us is, you're just not big enough yet. And I don't mean Pantheon. I mean podcasting in general. We just went over $1 billion in sales this year. We'll do $2 billion by 2023. You know, radio's around between 25 and 30 billion. So somewhere around, I guarantee you, somewhere around $5 to $10 billion, they will wake up and go, okay, guys, now we need to figure out a deal to make this work. And so those of us that are in that position, the big position to be able to handle that, we're the ones that are going to make the deal.
Well, I have the same problem with JBTV and YouTube with our, I'll have like Gary Newman you talked about, or who, any of these artists that we never make money on it, you know?
Yeah.
They go, well, those rights belong. Well, they came to our studio. They played at our studio. We should have something, you know, but.
Yeah. But so do they, what do they do with you? Do they just,
we just can't monetize anything.
Monetize. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We don't get a takedown. We've had a few of those, but not, you know.
Yeah, same here. I mean, we had one takedown, and that was because I used a full Beatles song. I talked in between it and over it, but I did use the whole thing. But I did it as an experiment because I wanted to see what would happen. And UMG came back, and we had a discussion with them. And they were like, I said, well, if I edit it, and they were like, well, you can do whatever you want. And we put it up there and never heard from them again.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, God, 4 or 5 years ago now.
And they're the big company.
Yeah. And let's face it, when you're messing with the Beatles, you know, you're going to hear something. You know, there's a few others, Prince, Zeppelin's that way as well, where they're very litigious eagles. But I think that they recognize that we keep throwing that back at them. We are the FM DJs, the record store clerks, and the music journalists of the past rolled together in a 21st century package. They can understand that because those old methodologies aren't there anymore, which used to be how they would get the word out, to the point of where, remember, they would pay, you know, illegally in some cases, but they would pay.
I was at a radio station where I had one of the music guys came in, 93 WQFM, I put on air in Milwaukee with Joe Kelly, called Sunshine Radio. Literally, I had one of the record guys come in, and he laid out lines of cocaine by my turntable and says, you got to get this record on the air. And I go, I'm playing it on the air right now.
But I'll take those lines. Thank you very much.
I never was much into the cocaine. I was more into smoking pot back then, too. So, you know.
Yeah.
Turned this into drugs. I love it.
Yeah. I turned to that white gold for a while.
And it's destructive.
It ruins everything in the end. It's no good.
It's crazy, crazy stuff. And
okay.
I could never, I edit, audio tape because I was an audio engineer, and my hands would sweat when I did it. And it's like, I can't edit this way. And then I'd start, getting real antsy about it and everything. But wow.
All right, Jerry, I got to run. My wife's bugging me. She's in Boston and she just got out of her day and wants to chat and see her fur babies.
Your dog's back there. Yeah, they've just been sleeping through this whole thing. Look at that.
They do. They'll just sit there, sit and wait for daddy to do whatever it is he wants to, or mommy.
Yeah, yeah.
When she's around.
So. Well, Christian, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, Jerry, a pleasure's all mine. That's been great.
Thank you, Christian. Thank you for being on our show, and keep on rocking and rolling. And I hope you get a lot more new podcasters out there to influence the world.
We definitely will. We definitely will. If you got any, no, if you hear of anybody, let us know.
I will definitely do that.
All right, brother. I'll
Thank
talk
you.
To you later, Jerry.
Okay. Bye.
There you go, the JBTV podcast, where we bring you the best music, the best interviews, and it's all unscripted and totally unrehearsed. Follow us on all the social media and spread the word. This is JBTV Music Television, the JBTV podcast. JBTV.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.